Nutrition is something we all deal with, of course, and many struggle to make healthy choices. And especially if you're cooking for one, you might be tempted to go for more convenient and less healthy options. Larry Mueller here. Lucky to have Sue Nitzke with us today. She joins us a few times a year to talk about nutrition and health, does a great job of explaining what we need to know and how to stay on top of useful information. And Sue, thanks for spending time with us today. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure, Larry.
Lots of things we can talk about today. I know even the Mediterranean diet, maybe bacteria and some heart disease information and caffeine. But let's talk first about living alone. I lived alone for quite a many years, 15 years. And so I cooked for one all that time. And it is, it's a lot easier, I think, to, stop on the way home and grab some fast food when you're living alone.
It's perfectly understandable. The problem is that, first of all, it can cost more money, but more importantly, the choices that people tend to make when they stop for fast food tend to be lower in whole grains. They tend not to have as many fruits and vegetables. They tend not to pick as nutritious of a beverage when they're having fast food. For a number of reasons, I'm not like banning fast food or anything like that. But,
no.
You know, if you're just one or two people, maybe you're empty nesters like my husband and myself, putting a little extra thought and planning into it, you can really get a lot more mileage out of the time that you do have for cooking.
Yeah.
And, make it more enjoyable and what really it meets your nutritional needs as well.
And, I forgot to mention, but you can join in if you have a question for Sue or a comment. Maybe you cook for one. What are some of your techniques or favorites? Are you cooking for one but don't feel like you're doing it very well? Probably a lot of people feel that way. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo even if you want to, or ask your questions right there at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Tips. I was thinking about what I did. One of the things that I, habits that I sort of got into was pretty often having people over for Sunday dinner in the evening. And then I would make fairly nice dinners and those. That would turn, we'd have a nice time and it'd be an early evening typically because you got work next day. But then I would have a lot of leftovers for the rest of the next week.
Right. And they sound mundane when you call them leftovers. So we call them planned overs. If you remember Mary Menace, I learned that term from her. One of my favorites is I actually like to make lasagna. I have a recipe that doesn't take a lot of work. And if people were coming over for an early supper on Sunday, that's something I would typically serve. It could be a vegetable lasagna or whatever lasagna you like to make. And why put all that into one little pan? Why not make? What I do is I take bread pans. And it turns out that kind of 1.5 lasagna noodles is the right width of a bread pan. So I make, it's like a TV dinner all set. So I make the pan for me and my guests, and I just double the recipe or however much I think I want to put in the freezer. And then the extra portions, I don't bake. They're just ready for the oven. And I seal them up in a bread pan with a heavy duty Ziploc bag, the kind that's made for freezers.
Yeah.
Line them up in the freezer and then, that's enough for another meal or two, just taking out one of those bread pans of lasagna. How easy is that?
Yeah. I mean, there's no extra
work. No extra work, really. If you're boiling a half a package of noodles or two packages of noodles, it takes just as long.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. So I was doing something right there, I thought.
There you go. I do the same thing when I make soups and stews. A lot of the things, what I like to tell people is if you go to the frozen food section and you look at the things that aren't totally overprocessed, but things like lasagnas and stews and, a chicken casserole kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If those are things that you know how to make, why pay them to get it ready for your freezer? Make a batch. Call them planned overs instead of leftovers, and go for it. Put them, make your own TV dinners.
I always found it easier to do when I was inviting people.
Then
you've got the motivation to do it.
That's right, and you're already into the process, and you're planning the steps and getting the groceries and all of that, which actually is half the battle. So yep. why not make a little extra?
Gail in Oregon, thank you for calling. Hi, are you there? Oops, yeah, are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks.
Okay, good. My husband and I have been making some lifestyle changes and working on our cholesterol numbers and that type of thing. And then last night I went to a presentation on, it was on nutrition and at our healthcare provider. And actually it turns out it's a presentation on the benefits of cleansing, which a lot of people seem to be doing. And it sounds pretty drastic to us. And I'm wondering what your take is on nutritional cleansing.
Well, I need to know a little more because there are people who do specific things to, quote, cleanse their colon. There are people who use some laxatives or fasting or special juices. Or what are we talking about?
It was not fasting, and it was, you know, you would be eating, and you would just be avoiding, you know, certain foods like caffeine and wine and all dairy products. So it's like, you know, like really focusing on fruits and vegetables and then doing like the green, what do you call it, green smoothies every day and stuff like that for 10 days. And then, and it really sounded, I mean, they were talking like, it could cure a lot of things and stuff. And I would just, I don't know.
This was your healthcare provider?
Yeah, you know, where we get our healthcare. And I was just kind of, and not to say that, you know, it wasn't legit, but just sounds, and like I say, we're baby boomers, and a lot of our friends are kind of like, you know, doing this cleansing routine, and you're right, I mean, they were talking about there's so many different ways to do it, and
do you mind saying who your provider is?
Yeah, I don't think I should.
Okay.
Because I like them.
Yeah,
but,
and I'll just comment generically because, without having heard the whole presentation, I'd be doing a little bit of guessing. But here's what I tell my friends when they ask about cleansing. And everybody asks about it because there's movie stars who do it. There's books about it. There's athletes who do it. 99 times out of 100, it's not going to hurt you, what you described, if you do it for 10 days and then get back to what I'd call a more balanced diet. If it makes you feel good, you could do it. I'm a little concerned about a couple of things you mentioned. One is I don't know why you would avoid dairy products, especially for 10 days. If it was a day or two, it would be different. Mm-hmm. You know, the lactose is readily absorbed. Milk proteins aren't usually a problem. So I'm not sure about why you would do that. As long as they're not selling you a bunch of special herbs to put in the blender with your smoothies and things like that, I think it's probably, you know, kind of up to you. I don't know any reason to do it. I have a few nutrition friends that we kid each other when we're asked about this. We say, well, you can do that if you want, but we have the self-cleansing internal mechanisms.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of joking, but really that's what dietary fiber helps us do, is move things through our digestive tract. You know, not too many years ago, there were some really questionable practitioners who would do, you know, they'd tell you needed special coffee enemas and things. And you know, they'd pretend that they found a piece of birthday cake from, you know, years ago in there and get people all upset. And there were some either charlatans or people who were kind of stretching the truth, trying to get people to spend a lot of money. If this is basically eating nutritious foods and not drinking wine and coffee for 10 days, that's not going to hurt you. Unless that actually gets to one of the topics I wanted to talk about today, which is caffeine, which we can talk about in a minute. If you're a big coffee drinker and you suddenly stop drinking things with caffeine in them for a couple of days, you could get a raging headache.
So think
about that, too.
Yeah, I
don't think we're going to do it. It was just because I got there and I was a little surprised kind of what it was, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it written about a lot of places, and we're more just thinking about just, you know, good general nutrition. And then I figured, well, eventually your system's going to build up again anyway, and you have to do it again. And it just isn't like a lot of fun either.
No.
Well, you know, I was just at a national meeting in Boston. It happened to be right on Copley Square, where the hotel I was staying in. Talk about an exciting thing that wasn't planned. It was after the bombing, well, luckily. But the point of this is at probably one of the national nutrition meetings, the American Society for Nutrition, the big topic this year was gut bacteria. There were special sessions about that. There's new research uncovering things that we hadn't, you know, we kind of knew about before, but we're getting more and more evidence about how important it is to have a healthy mix of basically bacteria in our colon, the lower part of our digestive system. Mm-hmm. And also there can be some bacteria that aren't as desirable that can cause problems. People who are taking, who have taken antibiotics and then not reestablished a good mix of bacteria in their systems, or maybe they're taking something that changes the pH of their stomach and it affects things going on farther down. It's really, if you have digestive issues that you think you need a cleansing for, you might also talk to your healthcare provider or maybe the people doing the seminar talked about how to reestablish the healthiest bacteria that you can have down there.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And the sessions that I attended, they basically said, you know, you don't, right now we don't know enough to recommend any special products. A good live bacteria cultures yogurt for a couple of days should help a lot for most of the things that we're looking for. Not that those are the only bacteria you want, but they help set up the right milieu or the right kind of living environment for the healthier bacteria.
There you go. Thank you very much, Gail, for calling. I appreciate your call. And well, you wanted to say some more about caffeine, and we'll do that in just a minute here. Our guest, Sue Nitzke, emerita professor and extension specialist at the University of Wisconsin in nutritional sciences. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A big thanks, by the way, to everybody who contributed during our spring membership drive. We had more than 1,900 listeners pledged. Pleased to welcome 217 new members to WPR. You donated $220,000 to Wisconsin Public Radio and the programs that you depend on. So thank you, thank you, thank you very much. It was just a wonderful one-day drive. And it's nice to be back with the regular programming with our guest today, Susan Nitzke, emerita professor and extension specialist in nutritional sciences at UW-Madison, talking about a variety of things with her. Today, relating to nutrition, we talk about eating or preparing meals for one. Caffeine kind of has come up in the conversation. And Sue, you've got there's some work out there on caffeine.
Well, it's becoming a hot topic because the Food and Drug Administration has put out some hints that they've been holding back on trying to regulate how much caffeine can be added to food products. A while ago, they told some manufacturers of alcoholic beverages with caffeine in them, like, you know, that's probably
that's a little bit overkill.
You know, that's probably asking for trouble. Are you sure you want to go there? I mean, they didn't go all the way to banning it, but they said, you know, if you do try to put those products out, we'll seriously consider it. And now, I believe it's a new gum that was going to be introduced with caffeine in it, and it was going to have a, you know, a high energy name. And on the product label, it was going to say not for children or only for adults or something like that. But, you know, gum, come on. So FDA told them, you know, this could be the straw that breaks the camel's back or whatever you say.
Well,
you know,
Judith was just saying that there's a caffeinated ice cream now.
There are caffeinated snack foods, and I even think they were trying a breakfast cereal marketing thing. You know, I mean, the word energy is marketing goldmine. I don't know anybody who wouldn't like to feel more energetic. It's interesting because when you learn about nutrition from a biological sense, energy to us is calories. And that's not what most people are thinking of when they want to buy energy products. And So the sort of making you want to feel more vigorous and awake and that sort of thing, that's all fine and good, but the products are really going overboard now because it has been such a helpful marketing tool for, in many cases, expanding product lines like gum. Mm-hmm. So the Food and Drug Administration, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and some other groups have really expressed concern about how this could really be used to overload children with caffeine or, you know, people who just overdo it. There are some cases that are being looked into that you know, they haven't proved cause and effect yet, but the associations of emergency room visits and even possibly some deaths due to overuse of products with caffeine. And then one of the things that makes it tricky is there are some other ingredients like guarana that are officially herbs and can be used without a lot of regulation in dietary supplements, but they contain a product that for all the world could be caffeine. I mean, it's a caffeine, it's either straight caffeine or something that chemically acts like caffeine. So it's really becoming very complicated. Some manufacturers are labeling how much caffeine is in their energy drinks and that sort of thing. And depending on if they're marketed as foods or supplements, they may or may not do that. It's like so many things in nutrition, it's complicated, but the FDA is saying, okay, we're going to have to look into this. So in the meantime, I'd just like to warn your listeners, think about how much caffeine you're having over the course of the day. I'm not saying don't drink a cup of coffee or even two or three if there's no reason medically that won't hurt you. But if you have a coffee and then you go out and get a 5-hour energy shot and then you have some Mountain Dew with extra caffeine and, you know, you could do it like all day long and really get your body into a state of overstimulation.
I would just sleep.
And then you would, well, you wouldn't sleep necessarily, or you could have some problems sleeping, and or you could really get headaches and feel terrible when you cut back. Because your body tries to adjust to a certain level. So until FDA gets this all sorted out, it's a buyer beware issue right now for consumers, and especially if your kids are thinking that these are cool products so they can stay awake at school. I know a lot of kids around this campus are thinking they got to cram for exams, and it's just a problem waiting to happen.
Sue in Cecil up next. Sue, thanks for calling. Hi. Sue, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Ah, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I would just like to know how she feels about probiotics.
Well, I love probiotics. Thanks for asking. That gets us back to the gut bacteria.
Yeah.
So there are substances that act as prebiotics, and there are substances that act as probiotics. So the yogurt I mentioned would be a probiotic.
Mm-hmm.
There are some products, inulin, you know, like how some people like to eat Jerusalem artichokes because they're high in certain substances that help your lower gut, again, be a healthy place for good bacteria to thrive. Those things, even though they don't, quote, plant the bacteria themselves, they make the colon more hospitable to the ones that you want to live there. Those are called prebiotics. And together, prebiotics and probiotics, they're just good, healthy foods in most cases. You don't have to go to the drugstore. You don't have to buy specially marketed products. But as I mentioned, the yogurt is a fine probiotic, and you don't have to get an expensive kind. Just make sure it has active cultures.
Hmm.
Did you have a specific question about probiotics?
Well, you said if you don't take them from, like, in a pill form, what kinds of, you said something about the artichokes, but what other types of foods would
have probiotics? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. The research on this is getting better every year, but, you know, we're still kind of investigating what really from your diet makes your colon a healthy place for the right bacteria to thrive. And in general, it's fruits and vegetables. It's, you know, it's a good, healthy, balanced diet. The special products would be the things that are high in dietary fiber. So whole grain products, for instance, and lots of fruits and vegetables. And especially I mentioned some vegetables like the Jerusalem artichokes are high in a specific substance that contains, we call them oligosaccharides. It's got a lot of syllables, and you don't need to remember the name, but it just does help to make it more hospitable down there for the right bacteria to grow.
I wanted to get back to milk, too, because dairy products, has come up here, and there is some interesting research that you have relating to choosing the right kind of milk for babies and toddlers. Mm-hmm. And I found that very interesting.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, there were a lot of news stories because there was a study released where a well-designed study had followed children for a 2-year period, young children, and they found that the kids who were drinking the low-fat milk were the kids who were most overweight and gaining weight faster than the other kids who were drinking either whole milk or the 1% reduced fat milk.
Yeah.
Let me rephrase that. 1% is low fat. 2% is reduced fat.
Yeah.
So anyway, the kids that were drinking the lowest fat, either the skim or the 1% milk, were the kids who were gaining weight the fastest. So the people who conducted the study kind of scratched their head and said, what's going on here? And, it made the papers, and some people overinterpreted it to say study proves, low-fat milk makes kids fatter. Well, that's not what it proved at all. It wasn't designed to have that kind of a proof. But what it told us, for one thing, is that there may be more of a satiety factor if you're drinking whole milk or 2% milk that makes kids eat less with their meals or throughout the day if they're drinking that kind of milk. Or it might be, sometimes we mix up cause and effect. It might just be observing what happens when parents are concerned about how quickly their children are gaining weight and switch them to the lowest fat milk that they'll drink as early as possible. I talked with about this to Dr. Frank Greer, who is a pediatrician, and he's a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and he's been a leader in their nutrition committees over the years.
Yeah.
And we both agree that, we really don't know what's cause and effect here. We need more studies. I know that's frustrating for people to hear. But I would like to point out that there are some specific recommendations about what kind of milk little kids should be drinking. First of all, for the first year, of course, breast milk is best for the whole first year and as much longer as you want to keep that up. But when you switch off of breast milk or formula for the whole first year, if they're not drinking breast milk, it should be formula. But after 12 months of age, they can almost all kids can switch to milk. And the standard kind of default recommendation is whole milk, just to make sure they have enough fat in their diet because they are growing rapidly. And what the Academy of Pediatrics is saying now is that for certain children, especially if they're at risk for obesity and if you're sure they get plenty of good fats in their diet from other foods, they eat avocados or cheese and things that have fat in them already, then maybe the lower fat milks are fine. What Frank and I agreed on is that it's really important to have a conversation with your healthcare provider, someone who's knowledgeable about nutrition for young children. The WIC program, the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, provides whole milk for babies after their first birthday and until they're 2, and then says they should be transitioned to the low-fat milk that the whole family is drinking after age 2. And that's sort of the standard starting point for everyone.
Sue Niskey, our guest today, as we talk with her about eating well alone, milk choices for youngsters, caffeine. Boy, we've covered everything here. This is great. If you have a question or comment for her, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Just back for a minute to eating for one, someone did email in and say, I think having a good stock of different size containers really helps for saving leftovers in the fridge or freezer. And isn't that the truth?
Right. And it doesn't even have to cost a lot of money.
No.
You know, you can buy fancy, I don't know, name brand kind of storage containers.
No.
They can be glass. They can be high quality plastic and that sort of thing. And that's fine. Those heavy duty zip freezer bags are also good. And what I find myself saving these days is when I buy lunch meats.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them come in these little snap-top cartons.
We have a bunch of those now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can put them in the landfill or you can wash them out well and save them for when you want to have a single serving in the freezer of something that you've made extra of.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of options. I have a whole great big, I bet you do too, a big tub of them in my garage.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I was out there this morning looking for just the right size. And, of course, I can never find the lid that goes with the right.
Yeah, but, you know, I know.
We'll talk about
issue.
That some other day. But, yeah, there's lots of good choices. Make sure that they're acceptable for food. You wouldn't want to use a container that wasn't meant to have food in it. And whether or not you can heat it in the microwave, you know, unless it's labeled that it's safe for microwave, you'd want to be careful of that. But things that certainly came with something frozen in them, you could clean them up and put something new in them. Keep a few of those around, and then that makes it really handy when you have some things that you want to save for later.
Greg in Kenosha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just had a comment regarding the milk. When our child daughter we were switching her from formula to milk, we did try the whole milk because it was recommended by a pediatrician. But she used to throw up or discharge several times. So we switched her to reduced milk, to percent one, and she was actually fine.
Excellent. And
there's a condition they call GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disorder. Do you happen to know, did they say that this child had GERD?
No.
No?
She actually was fine. It just, she just used to discharge like in 30 minutes after she had a lunch or dinner.
You know, one of the challenging things about nutrition is that there are so many things, we call them intolerances. They're not really an allergy, you know, they don't really involve the immune system, but there are things that just upset one person's system and the next person will be fine, and that can happen with little kids as well. So if she's, I think you
doing
said,
was
that
on
she, 2% milk is working for her and she's getting some fat in the other foods that she eats during the day, It should be just fine. How old is she?
And she's 6 now, actually.
Oh, she's 6. Well, then she's
she's done well.
Certainly,
but you did well
variety,
to diagnose what was the problem and coming up with a good alternative.
Right, and that's why it's so important to really find a healthcare provider who can coach you through some of these issues as they crop up. With every parent has had something to deal with raising children and the way they eat and the, you know, some of the things they ask for versus the things you want them to eat may or may not be the same. And another point in this is that she might have reacted to whole milk that way for a while, and then if you reintroduce it 6 months or a year later, it might
be
gone.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. Tim in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Regarding milk, we have a newborn in the house, about 3 months old, and we were breastfeeding, and we really don't consume milk or dairy products in our home, and I'm wondering when we start on solid foods and when we wean him off of the breast milk, is there something else we should provide as a substitute to the to dairy products, milk particularly?
Okay, so I'm going to start my answer with a caveat. This is a great subject to discuss with your pediatrician and maybe even a dietitian if there's some, if a family that has really strict food preferences of their own might want to make sure that the way they're feeding a child, especially an infant or a toddler, those are such important years to get good nutrition, good start. The dietary guidelines for Americans say that if it's fortified with calcium and vitamin D, soy beverages are an acceptable alternative to milk. Now, you wouldn't want to do that before the first year. The first year,
right,
if the
right.
child wasn't on breast milk, you would use infant formula. But after the first year, if you don't want to transition to milk, have a discussion with your pediatrician about which soy milk products to buy. You have to become a good label reader, make sure they're properly fortified or supplemented. And I'll also caution people. I know lots of people who go, oh, the word milk is in the product name, so I'll use rice milk or almond milk or la, 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 like it's just totally interchangeable, and it's really not.
Yeah.
So to get the right amount of protein and other nutrients that milk provides, the closest you can get is a properly enriched or fortified soy milk beverage.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, we use a lot of soy products in our home, so wonderful. Thank you for the information.
Yeah. Okay, so make sure they're fortified with calcium and vitamin D.
Yeah.
And not overly sweetened.
That's the other issue, for sure. Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, yeah, it's me, right?
Yes.
I have a comment and a question. The comment is that I've been single all my life, and so I've cooked for myself all my life. And I kind of like to cook, but I don't do a lot, and I have sympathy for people who come home tired and want to just. So I have a freezer full of things. And now this, your guest talked about packaging in lasagna. But I also will take, I'll make a meatloaf, and then instead of just sticking the leftover in the freezer, pack everything in individual aluminum foil and then pop it, throw it in the oven. I freeze bread so it lasts longer. I warm that up and it's like fresh. So I also have one dish meal. I've concocted a salad that I just think is great. I use pasta and nuts and the vegetables, and so it's all one bowl of everything.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I'm a very, very senior citizen, and I've heard this years and years and years and years ago, something about carrots, and I've always wanted to ask this question. I heard that raw carrots, you don't get the nutrients unless you cook carrots. Raw is not that, you know, not that bad for you, but you don't get the nutrients. What's the deal on that?
Yeah, this is one of those things, Diane, that's kind of a technicality that can be overplayed.
We eat a lot of raw carrots in our household. So.
Yeah, well, we do too. But technically, the cell walls of the whole carrot hold the nutrients in. And unless those cell walls are, the plant cell walls are broken apart, you can't really absorb all the nutrients that are inside of there before it gets past that part of your digestive system that would get all the beta carotene is basically the best thing in carrots that usually you're looking for. So if the carrot is cooked, that cell wall is softened or even broken, and therefore you can get a more of that beta carotene absorbed and digested and into your system. But it's really not like from 0 to 100. It's just a gradient that you will absorb more of the beta carotene if it's cooked. And another, if you ever need a piece of trivia, if you eat a salad and some part of that meal has some fat or oil in it, you'll actually absorb that beta carotene better than if you just ate the salad as a completely zero-fat meal.
Oh.
For the same reason, your body needs to form little chylomicrons or whatever they are, the little particles that get the nutrients from the inside of your stomach or intestinal tract across
oil
into
and
where it can. So a little dressing goes a long way in helping your body use some of the nutrients in that salad. So don't get excited. It's not like, oh boy, a salad isn't good for you unless it's got lots of oil on it. But a little oil can make a couple of those nutrients even more available for digestion.
And carrots. About four times a week, we have the carrots are what we have instead of like carrots and hummus with a little garlic.
Oh,
and so that's
instead of chips. Sure.
Instead of chips, that's what we have, carrots and hummus, about four different kinds of hummus. And that's what we.
You know, and if you're cooking for one, I have some brands of hummus that I've tried at the store, and I found a couple that I really like. So you buy one of those little cartons, or you make your own if you're really into it. But, you know, that and a bag of carrots, which will store a long time in your refrigerator, you've got snacks for a week. And it's, you know, it's delicious. There's all the varieties. My mouth is watering just talking about all the different flavors of hummus. So, you know, if you're one of the people who enjoys that, it's an excellent example of how, with a little thought and planning, you can have foods that are handy around the house that will help you eat better than just chips and
It takes about 2 seconds to put it out.
It takes no longer than the other stuff that we probably overeat, yes.
Ed Robert in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. You hear me?
Yes.
We do.
I eat eggs, and I don't eat a lot of eggs, but they've been in the news lately as being something you might want to stay away from because it could cause more plaque to be formed on your arteries.
So this relates to the gut bacteria thing I was talking about. The first, there was a study that said if you eat lots of red meat, I believe it was the carnitine can be converted to a substance. It's called TMAO. And that substance appears to be an agent that can increase the development of plaque in your arteries. So it's a cardiovascular risk. And then recently another study came out with similar observations if you have a lot of lecithin in your diet. And lecithin, our biggest source of, is egg yolks. So the people doing these studies and the people writing headlines have speculated, saying, oh, so maybe when we were saying all along you shouldn't eat lots of red meat and eggs because their risk of heart disease, maybe saturated fat was a distractor, and maybe what we're really talking about is substances that encourage the gut in your the bacteria in your gut to produce substances that then encourage heart disease. Now, I really think this is an interesting theory. I think it I think it'll turn into something, you know, like when they say, is there something there, or is this something real? I think it probably is something real, but it's going to need some more study before people like me are going to know what to tell you to do about it. But I did have a friend just this week who said she was going to take some lecithin supplements, and I said, I think I would recommend that you not take lecithin supplements unless you have an important medical reason. Well, she just thought it would make her hair shinier or something. So, you know, that wasn't it. But trying to take some of these products as supplements can be tricky in ways that we hadn't even thought of before. But right now, if you're taking lecithin supplements or products fortified with carnitine or carnitine supplements, have a talk with your healthcare provider, especially if they've been keeping up with the newest research, and talk about whether that's still a good idea and not the person selling you the supplements.
And we didn't get to the Mediterranean diet, but we're going to do that next time.
Because
I would really love to talk about that with you.
I too.
All right. Great. Thank you so much, Sue. I appreciate it very much. Sue Nitzke, an emerita professor and extension specialist in nutritional sciences at the University of Wisconsin. So it was a great conversation with her. I really appreciate it. So obviously, a healthy diet's important for your well-being and for mine, how we feel. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the important part of being healthy, happy, and strong through exercise. Ann Swartz from the Physical Activity and Health Research Lab at UW-Milwaukee joins us to talk about how to know if a fitness program is right for you and whether it will live up to the hype. Hope you stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.